As we mentioned a few moments ago when we spoke with singer and composer Theo Blackman, the Dogs of Desire are Albany Symphony's new music chamber ensemble. They are playing a concert tomorrow night at 7:30 that features Blackman, created by the orchestra's resident composers collective, Sleeping Giant, featuring arrangements by songs by composers from Charles Ives to Kate Bush, plus new works by the six members of Sleeping Giant.
Though New Music USA's Music Alive, and it's through New Music USA's Music Alive, the Albany Symphony has teamed up with Sleeping Giant. The composers have been in residence for 9 cumulative weeks of activity between the 2014-15 season in Albany. In the last few years, Sleeping Giant has experimented with modern-day recording of historical music narratives and its reworkings, as well as recordings and languages. And in the first stage of their residency with Albany, they shared a multifaceted retelling of Mozart's Requiem as part of Albany Symphony's subscription concert series.
Deep breath, and we say we are joined now by two composers from Sleeping Giant, Robert Hanstein. Good morning, Robert.
Good morning.
Very nice to have you with us, a composer living in Boston, Massachusetts. He co-founded the Sleeping Giant Composer Collective and co-directs the Fast Forward Austin Music Festival. So, Robert, thank you very much for being here. And Timo Andres is here. He's a composer and pianist who grew up in rural Connecticut and now lives in Brooklyn because that apparently is the law.
No, it's just a little cheaper than Manhattan.
Okay.
I heard it was now more expensive than Manhattan.
Isn't that the word?
Times had a big piece on that.
Right. Yeah.
So now, before we get to you two gentlemen, I want to bring in David Allen Miller, maestro of the Albany Symphony Orchestra, also top dog of Dogs of Desire. And so talk to us a little bit. Give us the mission statement, if you will. Dogs of Desire mission statement.
Well, first of all, just so that the audience, all your fabulous listeners who I hope are going to come tomorrow night to this
concert. Our audience is your audience.
Our audience, and that's one of the reasons we love you and love them. But tomorrow night, when you see the Dogs of Desire, if you've never seen them, the Dogs of Desire is essentially an amplified chamber orchestra, 16 instrumentalists. We usually play, so 16 instrumentalists is essentially our principal players. So it's a string quintet amplified, a woodwind quartet, flute, oboe, clarinet, bassoon, trumpet, trombone, horn, 2 saxophones, who do a lot of different saxophones, drummer with some additional percussion for this piece, and then keyboards, piano and keyboards. And then usually we sing with 2 fabulous female vocalists, but because we have Theo Blackman with us, this particular concert is really built entirely around Theo. So it's the whole idea of the Dog's Desire is to explore the world of American popular culture primarily through new compositions. So we essentially, over the past 17 or 18 years that we've existed, commission mainly young composers to write pieces that somehow connect to popular culture. So when it became possible for us to have this collaboration with the 6 composers of Sleeping Giant, they met at Yale, and they're all classically conservatory, university conservatory trained, but they're all very much immersed in popular culture, and so it was a perfect collaboration for us to have with them on this project.
Now, I know you explained this before, but why Dogs of Desire?
Because that was the name of all the lists and lists of names of groups that I made that my mother hated the most. So I knew that that was the most resonant one with it, because I wanted to think of a new music group
that
had no classical connotations. Yeah, I wanted to get as far. And she was like, it has nothing to do with orchestras. And that's precisely it. It has nothing to do with orchestras. It's entirely a new construct, something that's divorced entirely
from it. Way out of the house this morning, 2:30 in the morning, Murray picks his head up, Murray the dog,
and says,
"Say hello to David Allen Miller and the Dogs of Desire."
I appreciate that. I'm sure I know Murray's a big fan.
He is.
Yeah, that's good.
Have you brought the whole thing up about your mother in therapy?
I haven't yet.
You should explore that.
I feel like my whole life has been therapy. But my mother is very wonderful. But she would not be the person I'd go to pick the name of my new music ensemble.
All right. So let us talk to the people that are a part of this and will be creating the music that you'll be performing. And I guess I want to start with Robert as a co-founder of this collective. Of what was the original? Were you a co-founder too?
Yes.
Did
yes.
Were there 6 of you, and they're all co-founders?
Yeah. Yeah. All 6 of us are the original and only members.
Okay. So it's all Your bio doesn't say that, but that's
but
all
right. Rob is one of the tallest. he's one of the taller ones.
He wrote his in his bio.
Don't believe everything you read.
That's true. All right. So let me ask. I'll ask you, and then I'll ask Timo. But as far as the creation of this, similar question as the mission statement. What did you want to accomplish? What did you feel that was lacking that you avoid that you wanted to fill?
Well, I think at the time, you know, we were just finishing school. We were all moving to New York City, which is a big, scary place. Yep. And, you know, we kind of had an affinity for each other's music, even though it's a little different. And we thought that there would be strength in numbers, and that if we kind of banded together, we would be able to do things and achieve things that maybe would be less possible, you know, just as a solo. So we put on some concerts together. But then what it kind of really turned into was this interesting thing where we've been doing these collaborative pieces. So writing long evening length works as a collective, which now is really cool because we all have very, you know, robust careers as composers on our own. But this is this unique opportunity to do a kind of group project, which has a totally different dynamic and allows for different creative possibilities to explore. So it's turned into a really cool aspect of our kind of professional life.
And you have very unique and distinctive voices. You share a lot of aesthetic interests, but what's so fabulous about them is when they do these collaborations, you have six very handsome young men and very educated coming from Yale University, where they all basically have doctorates and masters and such. But they are...
Would you like a lozenge, Alan? Yeah. Are you all right?
None of us are single.
They're very unique. No, I wasn't trying to sell you in that sense.
But they're very unique voices
individually, and when they get together, they do this fabulous group vibe thing.
Well, it's interesting because, as you all probably know, me being the oldest in the room, bands of one kind or another always end up in what we call a band fight. Somebody throws something, and then that's sort of the end of it. You guys have avoided the band.
I wouldn't assume that at all. Uh-huh. I mean, I think all our projects are sort of the result of fighting it out in one way or another. I mean, that's sort of healthy. I mean, the thing is, being a composer can be a very lonely endeavor. And the time when you finally are, you know, presenting your work with musicians, it's all like rehearsal time. It's very rushed. It's like, you know, clock's ticking, as David always says. and so the idea that we could still have this, this kind of, peer-to-peer feedback, this sort of, sorting things out as we progressed with our careers beyond.
So you've never voted anybody off the island?
No. We've done that with music, I think.
Yeah, I mean, it's actually, I think at the source of what we do is conflict and disagreement. You know, because we're different composers coming from different places, we often disagree. But, you know, that's the beauty of it, because from those fights, if you want to call them that, come things that we never would have tried otherwise.
There's also In the publishing world, say, you have editor. If you're a writer, you have an editor.
Right.
If you're in the pop music world, you have a producer. When you're a composer, you don't really have that person, that sort of second set of ears or eyes. And
my wife's been arguing for that for years. There should be editors.
Back in the day, like the 19th century, you know, someone would send off a score to the publisher, and he'd be like, "I think you should cut this section or whatever."
Yeah,
whether they listened or not is a debate, but you know.
But that's a definitive human. This is different,
right?
A different set, because it's the six of you working collaboratively together.
Yes.
So back to Alan's question, which is, so who? And I know this is going to sound trite. So is the ultimate winner the audience, because they have, you know, they get to benefit in what you have finally ended up on? Or how do you, with what you finally end up with, there's concessions made, like who wins?
I think we all win in different ways, you know. I mean, as composers, we benefit tremendously because, like Timo was saying, you know, we challenge each other and can offer comments that we would never receive if we're just by ourselves in our room. But I do think the audience wins too, because they get this product that I think is totally unique, because, you know, there aren't a lot of collectives, so there aren't a lot of projects in our composer world being produced this way. I mean, there are collectives in other art forms. That's very common, but
so,
you know.
So that's a perfect segue. Tee up what's going to happen tomorrow night. I mean, how this particular project, and Theo talked a little bit about it, but how you conceived the project and how it came to be.
It's sort of, we were just sort of inspired by, well, Theo, of course, who's you know, one of the most versatile vocalists out there. And then sort of the mission statement of the Dogs of Desire that you were talking about, which is, you know, it's it has some elements of orchestra and it has some elements of pop music, and it's sort of in this interesting in-between space that I think a lot of composers our age are exploring. And we just had the idea to be like, okay, if we were curating a concert or curating a mixtape or a playlist or something, what would be on it? Like, what would sort of our, what would be the ingredients of our ideal meal?
Yeah.
And then from there, we sort of hashed out the repertoire that we wanted to explore and worked on the order and the flow and sort of who wanted to arrange what. And, I think we've come up with quite an interesting journey. There are a lot of interior connections in it, but it's also not too like doctrinaire.
No,
it's
definitely.
It's pretty freewheeling, I think, in a really exciting way.
I actually want to go back a little bit and ask the following question. There's a concept in politics called the Iron Law of Oligarchy. There's another one from Camp Bronx House, where I spent many years, which is there's always a secret in charge. So I want to talk about both of those concepts. The Iron Law of Oligarchy means you got six guys in a room. Some guy ends up being the oligarch. Somebody ends up, you know. And then the concept of there's always somebody, even in a collective, who is the what we call secret in charge. has that happened to you guys?
Did you say secret?
Secret.
Yeah,
charge. Sort of. Secret in charge.
Yeah. Well, you know, I kind of think we take turns. I mean, it's sort of interesting. I think different projects have different dynamics, and I think at various points people assert their will to greater or lesser extent.
Yeah, some people definitely have louder voices in the group, and you know, sometimes that works out that, you know, that what that person says is sort of becomes the popular idea, and then sometimes it works out exactly the opposite from that.
Yes, it can backfire. I mean, it actually does become a sort of deeply political situation, because you know, you have six people trying to make a decision. And everyone has an opinion, and everyone has a different way of articulating that.
Yeah. Part of the challenge and also the pleasure of being in a group is sort of leaving yourself open to having your ego not be the overriding force.
And one of the things that's been wonderful about this residency that Sleeping Giant has with us, because this is just one of the central pillars of this residency. This is essentially a three-year residency. We spent last year planning and getting together and meeting. This year is the first active year, so we did this great Mozart Requiem collaboration that was much talked about and I think really embraced by a lot of people as one of the most interesting artistic events of the year. And now this great thing. And the next year they're going to do a couple of other very exciting things, both during the season as well as on the festival. And what's been interesting is that the Giants have assigned two different liaisons each year and even through the year for us to talk to. So it's almost like, as they just described, you know, at the moment, Timo and Chris are managing this very robust residency. So they're the go-to people for us. And they're kind of making...
So they're the secrets in charge.
Well, at the moment, they're making certain sort of organizational decisions, I assume, but in consultation with their colleagues.
Right.
Well,
next
year, it'll be two different ones. I should also mention just a shout out to our great friends at this incredible advocacy organization, New Music USA, which basically supports composer residencies. It's based in New York, and it's a really important organization in the world of living music and living composers and orchestras and ensembles. And this is a Music Alive residency through New Music USA, so we really appreciate that. That's an incredible thing.
I find the origin story of this interesting, because you start at college. Mm-hmm. You meet in college, and you get together. And then as there is the maturation of the artist, mm-hmm. and then there is the maturation of us as human beings. Mm-hmm. So we go through these different life cycles, and we get married, and we settle down, and we move to Boston or Brooklyn or wherever.
Yeah. Or and two of them move to California.
That's right. And you have your life. And so for all of you to then sort of go through that all together, mm-hmm. Are there ever compromises or challenges that erupt of just, oh, okay, you know, this is my moment where I kind of want to do this by myself. I want that freedom as an individual artist. And while we are moving collectively in this direction, I think I need to move in this direction.
I mean, that's been one of the great pleasures for me of being part of this group is sort of knowing where we started out and seeing how our paths sort of both diverge and cross and sort of change as we evolve, which is inevitable and wonderful. Yeah. And I, you know, for my own personal work outside of Sleeping Giant, I mean, I'm continually inspired by my colleagues in Sleeping Giant. It's one of the things I value the most is like having these colleagues who they're like a step closer than, you know, just any composer colleagues. Like I feel like I can say anything to these people and I feel like they can say anything to me. And having that kind of unguarded criticism and that kind of, sharing without any expectation of reciprocation is something that's very rare as an independent artist.
And there's something very a beautiful reflection of that on tomorrow night's concert where many of the pieces are written by one of the Sleeping Giants and then orchestrated for the Dog's Desire by another. Timo, you did a couple of those where you took Ted's songs, beautiful songs, and which were written for small rock band or for piano or whatever, and he's transformed them into something. So it's this beautiful, real discussion across their different worlds.
And that was so much fun. Like, because, you know, Ted's song is a song that I have played now for 6-7 years, going back to the original band he wrote it for, which I played keyboards in, and it's the feeling of it and the sound of it is so in my head, and has been it's been knocking around there for a while, so it felt totally natural to be able to take that and transpose it to this different context. And again, like the song that Ted arranged of mine, I originally wrote for him. He played in the original band that I wrote it for. So it was the same there.
Well, now, John Lennon broke up the Beatles.
I heard it was Yoko.
Yeah, we thought it was Yoko.
Well, it was Yoko via John. Have you guys... do you see the John Lennon in the group? Do you know who it is?
Man, no, I know.
What
I
about Yo? Who's our Yoko?
I know. I'm just trying to think. Yeah, we all have. Many of us have. We all have partners. We're all in relationships, and I don't know who our Yoko is at this point.
To be determined.
TBD. No plans to break up. At least not for another year. They have to stay very much together.
Yeah, we're all kind of boringly stable.
I know.
But they all have extremely active. Private, personal, compositional lives where they're being played, their pieces are being played all over the country and the world, and they're touring. And every night, date I turn on my email, there's another concert announcement of one or many of their pieces being played. So they're very active. And I think that's part of what keeps this collective so healthy is that they have their own lives. And they come together a couple times a year to do really big projects like the ones with us.
So, Joe, do I have 1 second? No.
Oh, you know, sure, go ahead.
My fast question is, you guys are all Yalies. The question then becomes, how important is Yale in the classical music and emerging musical arena?
Well, I mean, it's a significant conservatory that produces musicians that make an impact.
Well, I think the thing about Yale in particular that is maybe reflected a little in our group is that one of the things that attracted me to that program was sort of the non-doctrinaire aspect of it.
Yeah.
If you look at the composers who are on faculty there, they're kind of all over the map aesthetically and in terms of background, in terms of the kind of stuff they do in their careers. And I found that very attractive, as opposed to some schools which have a very sort of set aesthetic.
Name one.
David Lang, Martin Bresnick.
Name one.
Like Columbia. Columbia
that,
is yeah.
oh, that is oh, not right. fair. That's
yeah,
not
yeah
fair
it's very fair.
I'm not coming on the record as taking a.
There are schools that tend to have a particular aesthetic objective in their music program or in their composition program.
I want to say, I think what actually is special about the Yale program and that is reflected in all of our careers is that they really emphasize, I don't want to use the word entrepreneurship. I feel like it's way too overused. But it emphasizes a kind of like make your own way, you know, kind of like, it's not as academic. It's not just, you know, take this test and read these books. It's more like go into the world, make something happen, you know, build your career. It really puts an emphasis on that kind
of
skill.
Composers aren't even allowed to defend their doctorate until they've gone out for a certain number of years, and then they have to come back.
Yeah.
So like you have to go prove yourself in
it's
the world.
Like a, it's like show me what you did.
Practical kind of thing.
Show
it's
me
very
what you
cool.
done.
You know, it's all graduate. The School of Music is just graduate. Right. They have a wonderful music department in the university, in the college, but it's a very elite place, particularly for composers, and many of the greatest composers in our country have come from there.
And yeah, I mean, one of our mentors is David Lang, who is one of the three founders of Bang & Icahn, and I think, you know, we've definitely taken a lot of guidance and inspiration from their work as a collective over the years.
Definitely.
David, real quick, because Hannah Wesolowski was supposed
to
be with us.
We should talk about that.
And this is a video projection part of this. So how does this fit into the equation?
What
we will not only hear but see tomorrow night?
So Hannah is a really fantastic projection designer. And what she has created is a kind of visual analog to the evening. And it's a really beautiful, it's color-based and abstract, and it kind of slowly morphs over the course of the evening. And what I think is really nice, we wanted something that would complement and not conflict. So I think a lot of times projections and video can be distracting and active and actually get in the way of the music. But hers, I think, really just sort of complements and sets a tone, creates a really interesting kind of mood.
Yeah, it helps tie together what is musically quite a disparate evening.
Yeah, and it's a through line, really.
It is sumptuous and beautiful. So
yes.
it's in the smaller theater here at MPAC tomorrow night, 7:30, and Hannah's visual aspects just make it a beautiful, beautiful production.
It's really gorgeous. It's really beautiful. Yeah.
Well, Friday night's Dogs of Desire concert will be a cabaret evening with Theo Bleckman and Sleeping Giant. To learn more, visit albanysymphony.com. Timo, Robert, David, thank you all for being here. Have a wonderful, wonderful evening tomorrow night, and I
thank
know it'll be a wonderful time.
Thank you very much, Joe and Alan, for
sharing your expertise.
All your coverage.
That's all we have time for today. First of all, we want to thank all of our guests here at MPAC, and the Albany Symphony's American Music Festival has events today through Saturday. For more information, go to albanysymphony.com/American Music Festival.
Okay, and thank you, David, and thank you, the group, and everyone at the Albany Symphony and MPAC for helping us. Also, don't forget the lockbox.
We have 103,000 in.
We are moving faster every day. But if people don't do the right thing here, then there will be no more fascinating discussions like today.
And the lockbox is so fantastic because that last drive lasted like 22 minutes because everybody had committed.
That's right.
It was fantastic.
The party was over before it began.
I got all my programming that I can't live without. So
and that's
tremendous.
What we want. It's WAMC.org to find out more information. WAMC.org. David Alan Miller, again, thank you for just being so great.
Thank you.
We love you very much.
Both of you and all of our friends at WAMC for...
Thanks also to our WAMC engineers here on the scene, Jessica O'Rourke and Dave Hopper. Back at the station, Rob Chacon. Our producer is the wonderful Sarah LaDuke. We'll be back in the studio tomorrow for another edition of The Roundtable. Stay tuned now for Midday Magazine, hosted by Brian Shields.